It's Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy, busy show, breaking news all over the place today. Roger Maltby with NBC Sports and Golf Channel is in Torrey Pines. It is the U.S. Open. Roger is going to join us just off the course here in a few minutes. We will talk with Roger Maltby as we preview Phil trying to win a major on his home turf and some other players, the Bryson deal against Brooks and Phil and all that. We will talk with Roger Maltby. Brian Scalabrine is going to be with us today. Brian, of course, with SiriusXM, does their morning show there, part of the Boston Celtics broadcast crew, a leading national voice. I taped this, in full disclosure, I taped this interview with Brian yesterday. So this is before Chris Paul's news came out. He couldn't make it live on the show. I'd rather have him than not. And news happens. So this is before Chris Paul, just full disclosure. And we'll talk with Brian Scalabrine. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Chris Paul. So here's what we know. The Athletic reporting that he has been placed in COVID-19 protocol. And that's where it sits right now. It could be 48 hours, false positive. Has he been vaccinated? None of this is known as of yet in the public space. And so because of that, we have a report. We have a report, and all I can do is go off of that report and say the Suns without Chris Paul are not going to go to the NBA Finals. But I don't know if Chris Paul is going to be out for that long or if it's just tomorrow the story is different and the next day. There's times where you just look at something on the surface and say, here's what's out there, and I can play all the scenarios I want. I don't know, but I know this, if it is an extended period, are there other players? I don't know. He's been in the locker room. Has he been vaccinated? All that stuff will come out, I'm sure, whether he has or hasn't, or if he gives the no comment. I've seen players that have given no comment. Chris Paul's head of the players union. Maybe Chris Paul's been telling these players, don't tell them one way or the other. I don't know. And you just have to go to, I hate the term, next man up, and all that stuff, because you don't know. Like the Clippers-Utah series could go all the way till Sunday, and this could be resolved. Kawhi Leonard's not going to play tonight for the Clippers. Is this bad news for the Suns? On the surface, you would think, yeah, because it means this series is going to be over quicker if he doesn't come back and play, less rest, maybe game one is as early as Sunday. But that's what the report is, and that's where it sits right now as we sit here and gab it up, all right? And I can't go any further than that. I watched Brooklyn last night against Milwaukee, and I saw one of the greatest performances I've ever seen out of Kevin Durant, out of any player. And to see him with his fellow star player, James Harden, on one leg, and Milwaukee just completely shooting themselves in the foot time after time after time and settling for shots that were just not smart shots. Milwaukee should be up in that series. They really should. And if you're Brooklyn, do you go into tomorrow night's game and say, okay, it's game six, we need a game seven? If you're Steve Nash and you're coaching tomorrow night, your team up, and you're saying, okay, we're down 15 in the third quarter, do we pull the plug? Do we say, yeah, we're just going to wait and get ready for game seven? Do you even play Kevin Durant tomorrow night? You just say, you know what, we're going to lose game six, but I know a healthy Kevin Durant, I'll take my chances on that, rather than he's got to be gassed and just beat up and tired today after playing an entire game and putting up the amazing stat line that he did last night. So that is on my mind today. The Diamondbacks, you know, so I'll keep this short because I've got other things more important, but I do think we need to weigh in on this. On May 5th, the Diamondbacks were 15-15. 15-15. And I'm sitting here now with a baseball team that has lost 21 straight road games. They blew a 7-run lead last. I didn't even watch the end. I thought, okay, they're actually going to win, and I'm going to talk about that. And then a Mike Yastrzemski grand slam, and the Diamondbacks just keep on losing. And they're well on their way. You know how the weather people here in town do this cute little fun game around the late part of April? Guess the first day it turns 100 degrees. Get in on this contest. It's sponsored by, and we're going to have fun, and ho, 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 it's going to turn 100 degrees. We're going to be the ones that will guess it, and you'll get a gift card, all right? I should do the same thing with the Diamondbacks when they're going to lose their 100th game. You know, give me the day, give me the time when the final out is made, because they're going to zoom right past 100 losses. They're at 49 losses, and they've only played less than 70 games. Like, it's going to be 110, 120. And just the way they go about it, it's just dreadful. Gosh, it's just awful. So, all right, Roger Maltby, Brian Scalabrine, that's all coming up. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, and I have to just full admission, it's been rough for me to keep my focus on today's show because I have Golf Channel over here to the side on because it's Torrey Pines. It's Majors Week. It's the 121st U.S. Open, and it's 118 degrees here in Phoenix. So I figured, let's get Roger Maltby on and lead on course reporter for NBC. NBC is going to dominate along with Golf Channel, everything around the U.S. Open. That's where you're going to want to be. And Roger's going to be right in the middle of it all through the thick, which is the rough, I'm sure. Roger, I appreciate you joining us for a few minutes there in Torrey.
Well, thank you very much. And your description of the rough is pretty adequate. And I try to stay from walking out there because it's hard.
Let's go through the course setup and what you see leading into this weekend. What does a winning score look like for you coming into this Open?
Well, I believe it'll be under par. It's a very long course. That doesn't mean anything to these guys anymore. I always viewed the course back in my playing days as a big hitter's ballpark. And it is. But that, again, is not much of a question. You know, you got to keep it out of the rough. The greens will be fast and firm. It is a municipal golf course, you know. So, I mean, it's had some play. I mean, they were playing up until the week before the tournament here, you know. It's hard to shut down a municipal facility. They rely on those greens fees and so on to keep going. So all that's understood. Course, with all that said, is in wonderful condition, as good as I've ever seen it. Mm-hmm. And we're forecast for a good week without a lot of wind, which is key here. You're right on the cliffs above the Pacific Ocean, and they can get ripping across here pretty good. But the forecasts really are for 5 to 10 mile an hour winds, which is negligible. So I expect some pretty good scoring by U.S. Open standards this week.
It's good for the paragliders who will be flying over you in those beauty shots.
Exactly.
That are just awesome and amazing. The fog can be a factor there at times, right? I mean, it is June. June gloom is something. I grew up out there. So June gloom is something that you look at every morning. Do you think fog may be a factor?
Well, it could be. We have a marine layer this morning. Nothing that would really stop play. But that's the golfer's friend.
Yeah.
Marine layer. It's going to trap the moisture. It's not going to evaporate as quickly, make things a little more receptive. It's the high skies. When you have no marine layer, blue skies, and wind, that's going to dry the golf course out and greens out and make them firmer, faster. You know, that would be the enemy of the player. So I think they'll look forward to a little overcast in the morning.
Roger Maltby with us, and he is in Torrey Pines with NBC, with the Golf Channel. That is where you're going to see all the action all weekend long, even starting today, the practices and all their coverage. It's terrific over on the Golf Channel and with NBC. Phil, so hometown kid coming back home. Can he take on the course? Bryson against Brooks. Those are the storylines we've been hearing about here in Arizona. What's most interesting to you, though, Roger? I mean, those are not storylines to ignore, I'm sure, but you may be like, Brad, come on. Everybody's missing this player or that player. I know there's a lot of them, but a couple for you.
Oh, my goodness. John Rahm, the golf he displayed at the Memorial a couple weeks ago before, unfortunately, testing positive for COVID-19. I mean, his golf was just tremendous. He's won on this golf course, and I think he's very comfortable here. I think it's really a good golf course for his style of play. And assuming that he didn't miss a beat through his quarantine period, I would think he'd be a player to look at. Dustin Johnson's showing some pretty good form. Mm-hmm. He'd be another guy I'd look at.
How about Xander
Schauffele? You know, Koepka always seems to – what's that?
How about Xander Schauffele? You know, let's just
– Xander Schauffele's a local kid.
Yeah. And he's, you know, always he's there. It feels like, Roger, he's just right there. He's like this close to busting through.
I would agree. He's got a very complete skill set. He's got power. He's got accuracy when he's on. Putting, like most everybody that's ever played golf, at times is better than others. But he's the complete package. He's the real deal. And oddly enough, although a much better player than I ever was, I was a kid from San Jose State that didn't have much of a national recognition when I came out on the tour. And he was the same way, kid from San Diego State. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, who's Xander Schauffele? And when he got to this level, he got better. He got better when he jumped up in weight class. And he's really good. So a great pick. You know, he may not be on the tip of everybody's tongue, but
right.
Great pick.
Phil, is Thursday anxious for you just to see somebody? Can they bring it back a month later? Can they do it again? How are you approaching Phil this week?
Well, you know, the question mark is, did he catch lightning in a jar that week at the PGA Championship? Really wasn't displaying much in the way of form where anybody would look at him and say, oh, Phil might win the PGA, but obviously he still has the skill set when he's got it. Now, as a guy who's older, gotten much older, you know, every now and then you can go out and you can play pretty good. Wow, kind of surprises yourself.
Yeah.
And then the next day, you go back to being the old guy. So that's really the interest, I think. If Phil is on like he was at the PGA, then, yeah, there's no reason he can't compete here. And who wouldn't love to see him finally win a US Open? Six runner-up finishes, come on. Would complete the Grand Slam. You know, there's a big sentimental tug there. He's a fan favorite to start with, but there's a big sentimental tug for him to do it in his hometown at his age. Nice story.
What do you make out of Bryson and Brooks? Well, I mean, when you see it and you hear it, is it just media stuff? We all saw the piece of tape. I mean, what do you make out of it?
Well, you know, it started with slow play. Brooks Koepka doesn't like slow pace. So back a couple of years ago, he made some comments about Bryson, you know, and Bryson on the golf courses, you know, the scientist kicks in very thorough, you know, I mean, they're going through yardages and percentages. What's the barometric pressure? What's the this, the that, you know, I mean, he can take some time. Okay. It's not a race. It's who shoots the lowest score. But at any rate, I guess it aggravated Brooks. He made some comments. I think Bryson responded in kind. And there you had the inception of this spat, so to speak. Now, I read where Brooks thinks it's good for the game. I do not. I don't share that view. Yes, noteworthy. Do real golf fans want to see them get paired together? You bet. Mm-hmm. And if it was to be in the final round of the U.S. Open, that would be quite intriguing, wouldn't it?
You'd have an audience.
But, you know, but I, for one, speaking only for myself,
sure.
I'm kind of sick of it.
Yeah.
I'm a little sick of the fawning over what's Bryson going to do next. He's taking a degree off his driver. He's got a lighter shaft. He's done this. He's done that. You know, come on, go out and play golf. That's the measure of whatever it is you're doing. Brooks, on the other hand, for me, I'm a little tired of the macho man thing. You know, and I'm the biggest, baddest cowboy in the planet, the fastest gun in the West. And, you know, that's fine. But I've had enough of it, personally.
Yeah. No, it's a storyline that I think, like you, I just want to see golf this weekend. And I don't need to have all the sideshow. I get the sideshow. Look, it happens in all sports. This guy doesn't like this guy. This guy doesn't like that. I got it. I understand it. But you know, you're in a great municipal course that has different looks, different views for the golf fan to just sit there and on their couch, watch the Pacific, maybe some fog, maybe some rough, and to get all caught up. And boy, I hope Brooks is paired with Bryson. Like, hey, come on. I think we're better than that.
Yeah. I mean, how can that circumvent, you know, the U.S. Open is a week to celebrate golf. It's the ultimate test, most demanding test the players see all year. And you're testing their mettle, their guts, their guile, their physical skills, their mental stamina. I mean, it's all there. Why would anybody shift attention from what the U.S. Open offers? You know, I mean, I think there's a good percentage of the golfing public that watches that kind of likes seeing them get their nose bloodied a little bit, you know, leaving it in the rough. And you know what I'm saying? I don't think they'd want to see it every week. I think they want to see great shots. They want to see a lot of birdies. I get it. But for that 1 week a year, we're all of a sudden, man, the golf course can make them look kind of silly. I think the golf fan likes that and embraces it.
It's good stuff. I'll let you go off that. I know you're busy, and I appreciate your time and your insight. We look forward to seeing you on all the platforms. NBC will have the events this weekend, also Golf Channel as well. Roger, thanks.
You bet, Brad. Good talking to you.
There's Roger Maltby. Appreciate his time. And you can see him all weekend long at Torrey Pines at the U.S. Open. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, as promised, we want to give another national view of what's going on with the Suns. There's all this time off, how they've gotten to this point. I mean, Brian Scalabrine, I listen to him and Frank Isola. It's 4 a.m. to 7 a.m., but I'm an early riser on NBA radio on SiriusXM. He does a great job there, and he's also part of the Boston Celtics broadcast over on NBC Sports in Boston. Brian, thanks for jumping on board for a few minutes.
Yeah, you guys must be really excited, just the changes and how fast ever since the bubble last year to now. I'm curious on how this Western Conference Finals goes with the Suns.
Well, you know, for us, it's been 11 years of sitting and watching just bad basketball. And we'd see Devin Booker, he poured, 70 in at Boston one game, and fans thought it was the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, he's on a bad team. He's taking all the shots. He's a great player, not downgrading 70, but, you know, you see that stuff, and that's all they had to hang their hats on. So it's 117 degrees this week all the way through here in Phoenix, okay? And nobody's talking about that. They're only talking, Brian, about the Suns. And it's a terrific story. What do you make out of what's going on out here?
I think this starts last year in the bubble. And, you know, the organization that this group had and their mission, Monty Williams, obviously, like, they just look different when they got there. They look like they're like, okay, we have this shortened amount of time. We're going to make this run. We're going to try to make it. They knew that they had to win every single game for them to make it to the playoffs. So in a way, that's playoff basketball, right from the start. And then obviously the addition of Chris Paul, that's a huge addition. You know, he's going to organize them. I've always, and I, on the contrary to what the nationally, you know, it's so weird when a guy is drafted, like DeAndre Ayton is drafted number one and Luka goes number three or whatever it is. And people can't get past that stuff. And I played with Kevin Garnett, and I watched DeAndre Ayton defend, and I watched how he talks on the defensive end. Now, he's not Kevin Garnett when we won a championship in 08 yet, but yeah. I love the way he defends. I think he can get out on the perimeter. He moves well. He can defend the rim. I love how he talks. I just thought, like, Chris Paul and him are going to really be a great combination. And then, you know, like you talked about Devin Booker, just, you know, we know what he could do in the past. Could he do it on a winning team? And I think the setup has allowed him to really shine. And you don't actually see any of the old Devin Booker, whether he was selfish or not. You don't see those anymore. You see him coming off hitting bridges in the corner for a wide open three. And I really like that. And I actually root for guys to sort of figure out the NBA. And I think a lot of these younger players have figured out the NBA. And I think Chris Paul has a lot to do with that.
Well, it's a great point you bring up. I felt like in game three of the Lakers series, Devin grew up. Because here's the thing. You can argue all you want with calls, and every last call you're going to, you know, you're going to do your thing, and you're going to get technicals that you shouldn't get, and you're just going to be thrown off your game. And somewhere between game two and game three, and because we're in Zoom world, we can't pull players aside and say, hey, what exactly happened here? But somebody got him and put him in a locker or something, because from that point on, I watch his demeanor on the floor. And other than going after Joker, which he should have done in that case, sure. In that case, you know this, you go, but he has handled himself as a completely different player. He's grown up into NBA playoff basketball, which makes sense because he's never had a playoff game until now.
Yeah.
I don't count the bubble as that, you know, as playoffs. This is playoffs.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is in a league right now where every superstar complains about every single call,
right?
Like, he does look like he's on a mission. I use this term, and I hope it's not like demeaning to anybody, but he has the look of an assassin. He has a job to do. He's out there, and he's out there to do his job and get it done. And he's doing it at a high level. Even watch him before the games where you got people beating on him and hitting his wrist while he's dribbling. He just has the focus of an assassin. And I really like it. I think in the NBA, we're like missing that. And it, like, things have gone a certain way, and people are looking at, you know, players are complaining, and people I talk to are a little bit sick of people people that complain about every call. Yeah. You have Devin Booker out there just getting it done and focus on winning, because it does take mental energy to do that. Not everyone can work an official as well as be the best version of themselves. So, you know, I commend him for taking the approach of like, no, I'm worried about what I can control. And that's what it looks like. And, you know, they're in a really good position here.
That's what Monty Williams has said, control what you can control. And he's really emphasized that. Brian Scalabrine with us. You can find him on NBA Radio Sirius XM channel 207. And also he does work with the Boston Celtics, former NBAer as well. I like the fact that this team, I'll just back up. It's an embraceable team because they do things like the mid-range jump shot. We don't see mid-range jump shots, but the Phoenix Suns, mid-range jump shot. Chris Paul gets 68 assists and 8 turnovers. When we see numbers that we just don't see unless the game is being played in a beautiful way. You're a history major, right? I mean, you look at the way they play it out here. It is kind of old school in some regard, I think.
Yeah, I feel like there's a commitment to their craft. And I put like Kevin Durant in this category as well. Like, he is committed to that pull-up jump shot as well. And I do think it's important not to just come down and jack up threes. And there is a game within the game. And the one knock I have on this era of teams is we don't have a lot of high, what I consider like off the chart high basketball IQ players. Like, I'm not talking about, there's a lot of guys that have a high IQ, but I'm talking about LeBron, Chris Paul, like Rajon Rondo, like those guys that see the game so differently. They're not just out there mindlessly jacking up shots, right? And I think it gives them some organization. And that's what I like to see. I think in the Utah series right now, I think they're missing Mike Conley. Mike Conley plays the game within the game. Let me go into this two-man game so I can get downhill and get this guy in the corner. Like, I don't know if we see that a lot from these other teams, but we definitely saw that from the Suns. And, you know, I think Jokic is playing that game, but the rest of his team was not. So that's why when you say it's a likable team, yeah, it's enjoyable to watch. It's enjoyable for each individual player to play to their strengths and their personalities and not just like, well, you know, we're supposed to shoot 43s a game, and I don't know what else to do, so I'm just going to jack up a three. Like, that gets a little tiring in the NBA playoffs. But in the regular season, fine, you live with it. But in the playoffs, you got to make the whole adjustment is, I'm not going to be able to shoot that shot, but I know I can get this shot, and I'm going to compromise the defense. And you see Chris Paul doing that, Devin Booker doing that, even Bridges doing that, running the floor, you know, and putting pressure on the defense or driving closeouts or getting to the rim. So I agree with you. Very likable team. It's funny. No one talks about the Suns being a championship level team until they beat Denver. And now every call I get, I do radio interviews across the country all the time. Every call I get, can the Suns win the title? I don't see why not at this point.
A better matchup for them, in your view, Utah or the Clippers? Home court would be with the Clippers. Doesn't mean it's a great matchup.
Yeah, so would they go 1-2 against the Clippers, 3-0
against the Jazz, and Conley and Mitchell didn't play in one of those three.
Okay.
So, you know, and it's, you don't know if it's back-to-backs. You don't know the stuff that goes into an NBA season.
So the way I look at it is, I feel, and I don't know if everyone feels this way, like, obviously Kawhi Leonard is a great player, but I think Rudy Gobert is a force. He is a force to be reckoned with on every single possession. He had like some sick number, like a 98 defensive rating when he was on the floor, but when he was off the floor, the Clippers had 170 defensive rating. And I don't think it's a knock on Derek Favors. it's one of those things where it just works because they're Rudy Gobert. And I think he has a huge impact in this series. If Mike Conley is available, I guess I'll take the Clippers. But if he's out with a hamstring, I think the Phoenix Suns can beat the Jazz if there's no Mike Conley. Like, you basically dominate the point guard matchup, and Chris Paul would take it to a whole new level. So many of these things are matchup-based and injury-based and who's healthy and all that. So, I don't know. You probably look at it closer than I do. What do you think?
Well, I think the Paul George deal, you got to factor that. If Paul George on Devin Booker, Brian, if you look at that matchup and say, you know, that's just not going to be easy versus the Nuggets series, they're really – Michael Porter Jr. wasn't there. He was an empty jersey at times. Great young player, right? Am I right on that? Mm-hmm. I mean, great young player, but – he just wasn't on the floor. And so, you know, you look at Patrick Beverley against Chris Paul. Patrick Beverley's a dog. He will get into Chris Paul. He doesn't care. And then Chris Paul's on the redemption tour. Didn't work out with the Clippers, didn't work out with Houston, you know, the whole deal with where he's going. So I kind of feel like Gobert against Ayton, everybody would doubt Ayton, but everybody doubted Ayton against the Joker. And I thought he played well against Jokic for the most part.
Ayton was phenomenal. Ayton was like, he won that series. I got it. Everyone played well, but the Joker kills everybody. And Ayton, his combination of toughness at the rim and versatility on the perimeter, it's not like I don't look at those big man matchups as that. I look at it more like it's more about Gobert affecting everybody else on the floor. But, you know, the Jazz do give up the mid-range jump shot a very, very high percentage. And you, like we just mentioned, Phoenix Suns shoot the mid-range jump shot really well, so they will get that shot. And you could see it a little bit happening in the Clippers series as well. So either way, I think it's going to be a really good Western Conference Finals with the Phoenix Suns, no matter who they play. And each one has a little bit of a storyline. So, you know, Paul George is such a wild card. I think Devin Booker would outplay Paul George, and I think he would kind of embarrass him because Paul George, I just don't feel like he operates when like there's a lot on the line or there's a lot. They're really magnified. But Devin Booker is going to have to score against Kawhi Leonard. And what we're seeing when Kawhi Leonard raises up his defensive level, it is a beauty to watch. It is art form to watch this guy defend.
One last question I'll get you out of here, and it's off topic. It's the team over your shoulder. So, of course, Danny Ainge was out here for years and years and years. He moves on. What's going to happen with your coaching search? What's going to happen with your roster? There's a lot of fans out here that follow the NBA.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is, so they're going to find a new coach. And I think this new coach is kind of going to light a fire. You know, like a lot of times when they make a change, you know, like things, they just shuffle the deck and it might work out. And everyone might, you know, just kind of turn the corner. I know we have two really good players in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. But those guys got to make people around them better. I just got, you know, talked to you about Devin Booker hitting guys in the corner. Like, those guys got to be consistent hitting the open man. It is such an important thing in the NBA nowadays with the lack of hand checking that you have to be able to draw to and spray the ball out. So hopefully those guys develop that side of their game. I think the new coach in here is going to have a really good team next year. I don't think there'll be a championship level team, their roster yet. They got to figure out the Kemba Walker situation. But I do think, you know, whatever they do in Boston, they always find a way. Brad Stevens has done a great job with some of the certain type of players that, and they got to a certain level, but you know, for us, it's not enough. We always want to win a championship, and the road to that right now is so unclear, but maybe after this offseason, we'll find out what they can do. You know how it is, contracts and this and that, taking on stuff, giving up picks and all that. We'll have to figure out what they end up doing, you know, with some of their players that they have.
That's really good stuff. Really enjoyed visiting with you. Thanks for the time today.
You got it. See ya.
Brian Scalabrine there. And again, you can hear him on SiriusXM, the starting lineup with Frank Isoli. Does work with the Celtics as well, former NBAer. We appreciate his time, and we're back with more after this timeout.